Welcome to the Wags of SCI podcast, where we discuss life, love, and caregiving after spinal cord injury, hosted by Elena Pauly and Brooke Paget.
Both of our partners are quadriplegics, and after connecting online in 2017, we began the advocacy and support group Wags of SCI, which is an acronym for Wives and Girlfriends of Spinal Cord Injury.
We know firsthand the challenges that come with living this lifestyle, and our mission is to spread education, awareness, and positivity from our unique perspectives.
Join us each week as we tackle deep discussions around balancing life as a caregiver and a lover to someone with a spinal cord injury.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Wags of SCI podcast. Here we go. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode. Today, we are discussing a Wags of SCI post from our private discussion group and sharing with you all some feedback around a post that I posted a couple weeks ago, asking for a piece of advice from Wags of SCI that have been in this game for a while. But before we do that, I'm going to hand it over to Brooke.
Sending a big shout out to Robin Wishart of Wishart Brain and Spine Law. She is the official advocate of the Wags of SCI community, and we want to thank her so much for believing in us since the very beginning of the group. Robin has been available behind the scenes for the last 4 years now to help Wags and their partners with their individual cases, with finding resources in their area, with letters of medical necessity, with connecting them with appropriate practitioners, and even helping them with legal letters and insurance and benefits paperwork. So if you need someone to help you that understands the community that we're in and understands spinal cord injury, please message us. Go to wagsofsci.com and click on the legal resources tab to learn more about our partnership with Robin. And then you can also visit brainandspinelaw.com to learn more about Robin's practice and her team and what she does to help the community of spinal cord injury and caregivers. So today's episode is really exciting. We got a lot of feedback on this post, so we wanted to create a podcast episode about this. Now, I know we've done this kind of episode in the past, but that was a long time ago. That was like year one of our podcast, where we did some insights into what you would tell a new WAG, someone who is new to this life, someone whose partners have been freshly injured. And this new episode is going to be an update, but we have a lot of different comments to report from our community, and we have a lot more to discuss. So we're really excited about this. And Elena, when you posted this, I was like, oh, I didn't know if people would be as responsive, but they were. We got a ton of comments, and it's really inspiring to know that these women have a lot of advice over the years and are willing to share it and are willing to open up to the newbies to this community, because like it or not, when you're new to this life, you rely on, you know, the women who have been there, especially in the private group. That's what it's for, right? And I only wish we had this kind of advice when we started out in this game.
Yeah, exactly. We've had a huge surge in members joining the Wags of SCI platform over the past, I would say, like 2 years. It's become explosive. This was a really, really great space, safe space for women to come onto throughout the pandemic when we were isolating, staying home, staying safe. And so the online community really took a huge, huge growing. And with that, with having those private discussions around sexual health, IVF, family dynamics, relationships, love, you name it, right? Balancing caregiving and whatnot. We've seen a lot of women coming on and sharing some, you know, there's some tough days. And I noticed that specifically over the last few months, a lot of women are asking questions around bladder bowel care, around balancing caregiving and mental health, balancing missing the old life, but being grateful for the life they have now, being grateful that their partners, even though they sustain a spinal cord injury, are alive. And So, you know, we always say that two things can happen at the same time. You can feel one thing while still feeling the other. You can grieve your old life while still being grateful for your new life and your new normal. So it kind of reminded me, like reading some of these posts, both Brooke and I have been with our partners living life with spinal cord injury for 8 and 10 years now. But I remember very specifically, it doesn't even feel like 8 years. And you and I talk about this all the time. I remember being in the rehab center being like, holy shit, like, what now? Like, is this it? Like, you know, from going from being a young couple in our 20s, with a lot of energy, you know, traveling, just being excited to go on road trips, just excited to go hiking, to go biking, to go fishing, doing all these outdoor activities with so much energy, to now you're sitting with your partner and basically sitting in a waiting room. You're on standby. And that is a really hard thing to adjust to. And I remember thinking, this is so unfair. I'm seeing everybody still getting to live their life and being like, oh my God, this is so unfair. Like all we can do now for months, you know, the doctors will tell you, oh, you know, give it 4 months before this, give it another 6 months before that. And then I remember having the conversation with one of the nurses in the spine ward being like, listen, I need you to tell me the truth. How long until we can go back to our lives? How long is this? Is this going to be a month? Is he going to be in ICU for a month? Is he going to be in step down for another month? Like, I need to know the details. I need to know the facts, the tangible facts, not just like, oh, you know, it's not that bad. Oh, you know, we just don't know. We can't give you definitive answers. It's like, no, we need to know so we can plan for our future. How does this go? We need to know. So I've been reading a lot of posts around that lately, and it's just bringing me right back to that, those very isolating moments in the waiting room being like, holy shit, everybody gets to live their lives and continue on and get married and have babies and buy houses and go on trips. But here we are stuck in isolation. So I've been reading a lot of those kind of posts. Pandemic kind of hit hard for all of us to do the same, but we wanted to bring a bit of light and love to some of these great comments from the group of what would you tell a WEG of SEI from a WEG of SEI who's been in this game for a while. That will be you and I and many others from the group who've been doing this for 30 plus years. Give one piece of advice to women who are new to this. And I really love that the first comment was from Dana Ritter. And she was one of the very, very first women that I connected with on through any kind of like social media or even website search, long before I actually even met Brooke. And that was, I always tell the story, 4 a.m., bottle of wine, sitting on my couch, crying, being like, what? My boyfriend just sustained a spinal cord injury. Now what? Putting that into the Google search engine. My boyfriend just had an SCI. Now what? What do I do? And her article came up, and it was about her and her husband. There were photos of her and her husband, and she was in her wedding dress and they were smiling. He was in his wheelchair and they were so happy. But just seeing like the emotion of like happiness, my brain making that connection to be like, holy shit, we can actually be happy again. This can actually be something for us was everything I needed to see. So then I followed that rabbit hole and saw many, many more, articles and YouTube videos by them. And her partner's a quadriplegic, but I saw, you know, she was explaining that these are his chores and he was putting a pillowcase on a pillow. And they were talking about how long it was taking him to do that. But he was like, this is my chore. This is what I like to do. I don't care how long it's going to take me. I'm going to do it. And again, being able to make that connection of like, things are still going to be possible for us right now. My partner might not be able to have any movement and can't do anything really. Can't even sit up straight upright in his wheelchair yet. Hasn't even gone into a wheelchair yet, but being able to see that and just say, hey, it's going to be okay. Like life can be okay. Life is going to be okay. You are still going to be able to live your life. So this was a great thread. So I'm going to pass it over to you, Brooke. What are some of your favorite comments from this? I know that you have a different perspective on this as well. And I'd love to hear what you thought about these.
Well, I think I'm going to read a couple just because I think they're really cute. And I think, you know, these women have a lot to say, and they've kept it pretty short, which is really cool, especially for us, like, you know, reconveying what they're saying. So, and obviously we're going to keep it anonymous because this is an anonymous group. And we want to protect the privacy of our members at all costs. So let's just go through some of these. So, don't fall for the GIMP card. Make them do things they can, even if you have to leave the room. They will thank you maybe years later, 29 years as a WAG. And then there's another one related to that. It says, whatever he's able to do by himself, even if it takes a lot longer than it once did, make him do it. I know that, this, you know, I'm kind of sympathetic to this because my partner is a C4 injury, and, he was very, very, very active. He was a mountain climber and a construction worker before his accident. And so he used his hands a lot, and he was very physically minded. And when this happened to him, you know, his level of injury means that he struggles with most things. And he does need 24-hour assistance with pretty much everything. However, when you set him up for success, he can do a lot. Like, you know, you set him up with his stylus, you set him up with his computer properly. You know, if you set him up so that he can move around and get through places, he can do a lot more than, you know, you would expect, especially since the start of his injury. However, I think there's a balance to this, just from my perspective. I think that men especially can get very, they can get very upset and defensive and frustrated if they can't do something right away. And you have to understand that, like, there has to be communication between the two of you, because if your partner cannot do something and he can't do something and he actually can't do something, you shouldn't leave him alone in a room to do it. Like, there's a fine line, right? This is all about communication to me. And if your partner, you know, you should definitely encourage them to try and do as much as they can and understand that they were probably good at doing things the first time really well before their injury, but that's not going to happen after injury. And to just understand that, like, you're going to have to do things over and over and over and over again before you even get anywhere. Once they understand that, and once you understand that, it makes things a lot easier, because then you can communicate and you can celebrate the little things, the little milestones. Like, hey babe, today I put my stylus on myself. My husband has, like, a left arm that doesn't work very well at all. And so I'll never forget the day when he was able to put his stylus on his left arm and move his bicep up. And, that was a big thing for us, because, you know, he can't go and get his stylus himself. He can't pick it up. He can't do a lot of things with it. At least he can take it and put it on a hand that doesn't really work that well. And he can move the hand around in case he needs to use his other hand to do something in a weakened state, but he can still do it. Like, it's all about, for me, the little milestones and celebrating what the body can do after injury versus pushing it to do something it may not be able to do. However, I think it just depends all, like, I mean, every spinal cord injury is so, so, so different, and every person mm-hmm. is so, so, so different. And you have to, like, really factor that in. So, well, I definitely agree with just, you know, push each other, push him to do as much as he can. I definitely don't think, like, pushing too hard is a good thing, because that will, in my opinion, really change the dynamic of your relationship and create a lot of frustration, especially when there's a lot of frustration to begin with this injury. I think it's a fine balance, and, you know, that can only be solved with really getting to a place where you can communicate super effectively, like, between the two of you, right?
Well, I like what you say there on a couple notes. One is, obviously, don't leave your partner in danger and harm. setting them up for success. Like, same with Dan. He's a C5-6 quadriplegic, but you know, he has a Quad Chef account, and he was very proud of it, because I still remember the first day that somebody gave us a cutting board with a knife attachment. And after a year, he was able to help me chop up vegetables with this attachment. And I remember that being a huge celebration in our house. I was like, oh my God, you're chopping up, like, the vegetables for a stir fry. But again, it's being reasonable to set somebody up for success. You wouldn't do that with anybody. Why would you do that? You wouldn't do that as an employer. You wouldn't do that with your child. You wouldn't do that with somebody who's struggling in any way and putting them in a horrible, both mental health and physical, for your physical health, in a horrible position. So it's, you know, with us, that's still something we do. It's, you know, I bring down all the cookware for him. I put all the vegetables on the counter. I put the cutting board. I put, to this day, this is how we work as a team, and teamwork is important. That being said, I read a comment here too that says, but also don't get upset when they don't fold the towels exactly right or miss spots when they dust. It's like that right there. And that's our thing in the house too. Dan folds the towels. Are they perfect? No. Do I refold them? Yes, in secret. I don't do it in front of him. I don't want to upset him. And so it's just like being reasonable. I'm never going to be like, oh my God, look what you've done. You should be ashamed of how you fold the towels. No, what's the point of that? I don't do that in my relationships. You don't do that in your relationships. Don't do that to your partner. So I really like that somebody mentioned that sometimes you have to let go of the sense of needing things to be just right. Accept the imperfections. Be grateful for the folded towels or the clean countertops or the swept floor or whatever it is that he's contributing to. Even if it's not how you would do it and isn't magazine worthy. It took me a beat to realize this. Now it just makes me smile. And I love that comment because that right there is exactly what it's about. And I've shared this very openly, publicly many times with our group, our audience. At the very beginning of Dan's injury, this is kind of how we figured it out. Like, I would go on girls' nights. I remember going for 1 week going away. And Dan, the other day, we were talking about this. And he was like, you know what? That was like the hardest, but best thing that you did. He was like, I had to go and ask neighbors for help. I had to figure out who are my people if you're not around. God forbid something happens to me. What is the system? What is his setup? And our thing in our house has always been be in charge of your own care. Be able to communicate what you need for your care. Be able to know who can you rely on? Who is your backup? Who can you call if something goes sideways? Most recently, I was in a car accident and got hit by a garbage truck. What would happen to Dan if, God forbid, something more serious happened to me? So these are real conversations to have. And on that note, I know you and I have talked about this before too, is you can register with the closest fire department in your area for safety, to let them know that there is a quadriplegic or somebody with a disability that lives within the area, just in case of fire. Register so they know. So these are just simple steps. It's like, prepare. We always say, expect the best, but prepare for the worst. Don't just let it smack you across the face when the time comes. So it's that same fine balance, like Brick was saying, figure out what works for you. It's very individual. It's very personal. Figure it out. Figure out what that balance is for you, because they always say the key to life is balance, and you'll start to feel a little squirrely if things get out of balance and it's too much of this or not enough of that. So get your supports in place. It's really, really important.
Yeah. And now that we're, you know, you had that little, honest moment, I'm, you know, back to the original comment about, you know, do it yourself, figure out how to do it yourself, see what he can do. Leave him alone in a room if you have to. Evan and I, and I remember this from year one of the injury, we had, you know, we were acclimatizing to the injury. We had a lot of, you know, we had a lot of disagreements. I think, you know, when stress is involved and you're trying to like normalize your new life and you're trying to get used to things, you know, there's fights that can happen. Right. And I remember at least two times that this happened where, something would happen, we'd have an argument, and then he would be in the bedroom and I would say, okay, just figure out how to do it yourself. And I would, you know, close the door and I would go into another room for a few minutes to cool down and just leave him. And I remember how horrible that was, because it's like, yeah, it's great to take space, but your partner already can, he may not be independent. My partner is not independent. And like almost punishing them and being like, okay, you do it yourself. You know, if you're not going to respect me or if you're not going to do this, then just do it yourself. And you leave them alone. It's like, I would strongly advise against doing that, because it just creates more fear of abandonment and fear of dependency and fear of not being independent. And I would like strongly recommend not going there. I mean, you can't avoid it. If you go there, you go there. But immediately after I would do that, you know, and it only happened a couple of times, I would just go in and I'd be like, okay, I'm so sorry. Like, this isn't, you have to be able to separate your feelings of, I'm so frustrated with the situation right now. I'm so sad and I'm grieving. And, you know, we just got in a fight, with the whole fact that you are there to help him and you are his caregiver at the same time. And this is the whole balance thing of being, this is why this group is so unique, is being able to balance that. Like, normal people would be able to literally leave the house if they got in a disagreement with their partner, right? They would say, I'm going for a drive, or I'm doing this. Sometimes in our situation, especially with higher level quads and stuff like that, sometimes that's not possible because you are that, you know, that hand when he needs it and that assistance when he needs it. And so, like, being able to like organize yourself enough in your mind so that you can still have an argument and still separate yourself, but without depriving that person of the help that they need, is definitely a skill that you will have to learn very mm-hmm. early on.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also kind of like human nature to have, I mean, we're humans having we're souls having a human experience, and emotions can arise, especially when you're in stress. We haven't heard too much of that kind of situation though, like on the group, like women will come forward and say, you know, I'm really stressed out. And we haven't heard too much of that though, where it's like, well, that sucks for you. Figure it out on your own when you have a high level quadriplegic. But I think that those are like super real emotions with any relationship, able-bodied or not, being able to want to take space, yeah. right? That's the reality yeah. of it, is like, and you want to take space so you don't say something that you don't mean or react, or
exactly,
especially when you're in high stress and you're already like over the brim. And you're just so full and you're just like, it's a natural human response. Being able to, I always say in any sort of disagreement, being able to be honest and then come back together and be like, listen, we can work through this. That is the most important thing. It's okay to have disagreements. It's okay to disagree. But being able to come back together and recover, you actually begin to mend a stronger relationship and have and build trust, being able to know that you can openly speak to that individual, to your partner or family member or a friend or whoever, being openly able to say how you feel, what you mean, without feeling like there's consequences, or, you know, I can't tell you the truth, I'm withholding information from you because I'm so afraid that I can't, that there will be consequences for me. And that's the biggest thing, is being able to rebuild, being able to move forward, being able to trust the person that you're communicating with. So on to the next comment. Give grace to family and friends who say and do stupid or insensitive things in the early days. They don't know what they don't know. And you don't want to burn those bridges at this stage, because those are so important, right? And number two, this didn't happen to him. It happened to both of you. You have every right to all the feelings you experience. So there you go. There you have it. Don't, you know, things can be said, things can be done. Don't take it too personally. And also feel your feelings. You got to feel it to heal it, man.
Yeah, for sure. Really good points there. And yeah, like as you're talking about all this, it's like, it really brings you back, doesn't it? I know a lot of times Elena and I do yeah. these podcasts and we're like, it takes us a day or two to recover afterwards, you know, because we, yes. you know, this is like, it's like doing like therapy, right? It's like bringing these things up to be seen, and all the residuals of the stuff we haven't dealt with, it just like comes to the surface. You're like, oh, hello there.
Well, it's always interesting. But it's also interesting too, how that presents itself in like your brain and body and your emotions. You're like, oh, I thought it was over that. And then you get kind of like shivers talking about it again. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, yeah. I thought it was over that. I thought we talked about yeah. this. I thought I didn't have any like stored emotions yeah. around that, but I guess I do.
So. Well, and you know what? That's a really good point to bring up, because it's really important to understand that these emotions, they don't go away. They just get integrated into who you are. And I think a lot of us, especially at the beginning stages of injury, will say, oh, when is this over? I think the sooner that you can understand that you're always going to be working on something, you're always going to be dealing with some sort of crazy emotional state or something. You just, as you move on, I like to call it like you get a bigger container for dealing with this stuff. So like you, these things don't go away. You just are able to handle them better. And you like, you're able to understand more of these feelings that come along, which I think is the point of being human. And like you said earlier, we're all human. And I think we've been trained by society, as we've said before in many episodes, we've been trained, especially in Western society, to think that we can just cover up our emotions and that we shouldn't have emotions and we shouldn't have feelings in our body. But when the exact opposite is actually true, we are having a human experience. We are humans. We express emotion. We have to go through very hard emotions and we have to feel them in our body in order to release them and integrate them and deal with them and look at them. And it's such a complex process. So there's a couple of comments in here that actually relate to that. It's okay to have emotions about the injury and the way it affects you, even if you met post-injury. Here's another one. When shit goes sideways, as it will, take a deep breath or two or three, take care of yourself so that you can take care of others. Then there's another one that says it will get easier. And I agree with all of those. They all mean something different, but I really think that you just become more capable. And if you look after yourself, it doesn't build up. Like it doesn't build up in your body so that you don't have to wait 2 years and then have a sickness or some sort of big release. That deal with things as they come. Like don't worry about what's coming next because there's always going to be something coming next, right? It's never going to stop. And the same can be true for not just this SCI life. The same is true for every single person. It's all relative, right? Everyone's life is relative, right? So they think that their experiences are the worst experiences. And boy, is that ever true. Like, honestly, 10 years on, I look back and I'm like, okay, there's been so many times when my partner's been like, oh, you'd think that these people would understand that, you know, I'm paralyzed. I can't do this. And I, you know, their situation isn't really that important right now. And it's like, no, they don't. They don't understand because everything is relative. Everyone thinks their problems are the worst problems. Everyone thinks, oh my God, do I have to deal with this? Oh my God, is it going to get worse? How can I get out of this? I think that's a huge misconception and it happens when you're under stress where you think that people have better lives than you. They don't, it's just different.
That's a really good point. Highlight reels, right? That's why it's like social media. Oh God, people talk about this all the time. Social media is like the thief of joy if you go down the comparison path. And that's, I feel like that's kind of what happens when it's like you're sitting in freaking ICU, sitting in the waiting room doing nothing, waiting for the doctor to give you the next news. You're sitting on social media because it's easily accessible for you to have your gadget in your hand, right? So that is a big trap. And then you're like, oh, look at Becky. She's off in wherever. Palm Springs drinking pina coladas or walking on a beach somewhere in Thailand, going to a full moon party or whatever it is. It's like you kind of go down that rabbit hole of like, what is my life going to look like? But life can be really fantastic. The amount that we have grown, to be quite honest, when I look at Dan, I look at myself, the amount of growth, I look at you, I look at Evan, I look at the women in their community, the amount of growth in such a short period of time is like exponential. It's fantastic to be able to see. I know for a fact that these are some of the strongest women in the entire world. I know that for a fact. It's not even like comparable. It's not even up for debate. I know this for a fact because we read these posts daily. We get messages, emails, DMs. We read through everything that everybody sends us. We know our community and these are some of the toughest bitches out there. So
that's just
the way it goes. And I like this one too. This one comment says it's okay to do stuff on your own that he can't do. Go to the beach, bushwalks, spend 30 minutes alone chilling. That's a hard one. And I know for a fact, both you and I struggled with this at the beginning. I know for a fact that I've seen tears in my car trying to go for a girls outing, being like, this is so mean. I can't leave him at home by himself while I try to do this and that. We've been witness to that. We've both experienced that guilt, that shame of, you know, I don't want to do that because he can't do that. But then you kind of go into be careful of that because you can also become resentful of, is he keeping me back from doing things that I still want to do? So it's a very tedious cycle to get caught up in. Again, listen to yourself, to your gut feelings. Try both. Try missing out on something because you feel guilty. Try leaving him alone because you feel like, you know, I'm being held back, and then see how you feel about both situations. That's my biggest piece of advice is do both and then see how you feel and sit with that. And come to your own conclusion of what you feel comfortable with. And you kind of like can conduct your own longitudinal studies around this and just keep going and try every year and see how it changes for you and see how those emotions change for you and see how your partner feels around that too. Because after all, WAGS of SEI is a relationship community. It's not just about the WAGS. It's about how you're growing in your relationship. So we'd love to hear your opinions and thoughts around this too.
Yeah, for sure. And I also wanted to add to that, because yes, this is very difficult. It's very difficult to get to a place where you're like, okay, I'm going to go take some time for me. However, I also wanted to send some understanding and compassion out there to women who may not be ready to even do that. I remember, especially during the first few years of my partner's injury, I didn't have the energy or the desire to go out and do things for myself. I was still trying to recover from the first year and from the injury and from the accident. And I think it's important to really be in tune with yourself, because a lot of the time people will jump back into it and they'll just be like, I want to go and do this and distract myself. And there's a fine line between doing something because you want to distract yourself and because you want to get away from something and run away, versus doing something that you actually really want to do that is therapeutic and that is loving and kind to yourself. And that's something that is an activity that you would like to do. Right. And only you will know, only you will know and understand what that is for you. So I think pay attention to your level of fatigue. And if you want to stay home and literally just go into bed and lay there as your quote me time, that's fine too. And I think that is very, very important. I don't think people do it enough. I don't think people take 15 minutes and just relax their entire body and do a meditation and just zone out for 15, 20 minutes. I don't think people do that enough. And I think that that wears us out, especially as caregivers. But at the beginning of this injury, there's no way to do things properly. It's just about tuning into what you and your body, because mind and body are different a lot of the time, right? Tuning into like what your body needs, and then also balancing that as to like what your desires are and what you would like to spend your time doing. Because sometimes our minds say, I want to go and be doing this. I want to go and do a spin class. I want to go and go on a trip. And your body is so fatigued that it's not cooperating and you don't have the energy to do that. And you get frustrated at your body, right? So it's all about just you and what you need for your recovery and your healing. And I think the solution to all of this is to just understand that there's nothing wrong with doing what you want to do if you can make it happen. There's nothing wrong with self-care. There's nothing wrong with investing in time for yourself. It's actually, in my opinion, should be mandatory for all WAGS of SCI. But that looks so different for everybody. And just even sitting in your car and having 10 minutes of breathing is self-care to me, to a lot of people in this community. And so just like being balanced as to like what your self-care actually looks like and how it makes you feel in your body. Because as someone who did a lot during the first couple of years of my partner's injury, like we lived in California, we went to different places for rehab. We spent a lot of time and money on healing, and it was all about him, right? And I did a lot of activities for myself, but resting was definitely not one of them. And I regretted that, you know, as soon as year three hit, year four hit, I started saying, okay, this is starting to catch up with me. I need to invest some time in myself. So if I could tell myself something, it would definitely be like it would be to understand that you may not want to chill because you're in fight or flight all the time, but that's going to come crashing down pretty soon unless you start to like factor in some relaxation into your routine.
No, that's a good point. I remember kind of being like a chicken with my head cut off. Any moment that I could get away, I'd be like, see ya, going to drink wine with my girlfriends. Bye. And that definitely caught up with me over the years.
Right. And that happened, but that happens. That's something like, this is how you people cope, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I guess so. At that time I didn't see anything wrong with it. Now in like hindsight, I'm like, whoa, like I could have definitely done things differently. Mm-hmm. I think that's important for growth though, is being able to say that instead of being like, nope, nothing wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. Everything's fine. Yeah. No, I think that's important for growth to be able to look back and be like, yeah, things could have been differently, could have been done differently. I'm really grateful we've been together for 11 years. I'm really grateful we're still together. I'm really grateful that we're still wanting to be together. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some very challenging days, but there is still nobody else that I want to spend my time with more.
Yeah. And like, what do you think? But when you think about it, it's like, you can also do the opposite. Like, you wanted to go out and have drinks with your girlfriends and get away and you didn't see any problem with that. There's also the opposite of like, you spend way too much time without balance on your partner. And then that also can catch up to itself. So it's, again, like, I feel like all of our discussions always come to the same kind of conclusion, is that you have to focus on balance and finding your own balance and what that means to you. Right.
Totally. I like this one here. Don't allow the injury to become an excuse for bad behavior. If he was a good man pre-injury, he can be a good man post-injury. Therapy. Even if you think you don't need it, have it. Everyone should have it. Look after your mental health the way that you look after your physical health.
Yeah.
Learn to laugh together at everything. The poo emoji explosions. The wheelchair breaking the falls. Once you know he's okay, laugh. It lightens the mood and stops these things from dragging you down. Uh-huh. That's a good one. I love that. It's the truth. I mean, I don't know how much laughing we do over those things. Usually it's like, ah, really? Again? Come on. But I've read a lot of women's comments around this being like, we laugh about this stuff all the time. So I'm like, good for you guys.
Yeah.
If you're able to do that, it's also like, how do you process without bypassing, without not sitting in it, which is kind of like me. Like, my personality is very much like, deal with it, get over it as fast as possible so you can move on. That
you're Aries.
Yeah. Where I'm like, okay, give me the facts. Give it to me straight. Slap me across the face. And then I can deal with it. Which is like, I take the punches pretty hard. And then years later, I'm like, whoa, what just happened? Right?
Yeah. I think a lot of people are like, I think it's really important to share these stories because a lot of people are like that. That's a very common thing, especially when you're under stress. It's like, go, 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 go. Hit me. I can do this. And then it's like, oh, like a few, but it's a good way to see that the body keeps score.
The body keeps the score. If you want a good book to read, get it.
Yeah. The body keeps the score no matter what. You can't run away from it. The body is an imprint of what you have thought, felt, and gone through, and there's no way around it. And you can bypass all you want, but it's going to come back in something in your body. So you might as well listen to your body while you can. Speaking of bodies, this comment is very important. And I think especially now it's more important than ever. Medical professionals do not always know. You know best. So be the advocate and never stop fighting. I will say that you don't always know best. But medical professionals certainly do not always know best. And it's important to know that they do not know your body. They do not know your partner's body. They only know, first off, the hot, cold, hard truth is you are a number, right? You are a patient. You are a case study. They don't know your background. They don't know your history. They only know what they've been presented with at that time and what's on your medical file, right? They don't know the ins and the intricacies of what you've experienced. They don't, you know, a lot of the times us caregivers know our partners way more than their doctors, because their doctors have so many other patients. And the other cold hard truth, besides that you are a number, is your doctor only gets paid a certain amount of time to be your doctor. And if they're not getting paid, they're not your doctor. They forget about you, right? So again, balance, right? You have to know your body. You have to understand the intricacies of your body. And you have to know that Western medicine and doctors do not work with the intricacies of the energy body. They don't work with the intricacies of how all body systems work together,
how you are a whole. They work with pieces. And it's really important to understand that right off the start, because a lot of doctors are not experienced with spinal cord injury, and a lot of doctors do not understand what they can't see. And spinal cord injury is a perfect example, especially things like spasms and AD and all of these things, even the spinal cord. Doctors don't know shit about those things. They don't know anything about these things. And you are a number that is put with other numbers. And the consensus of what all the numbers have done in the past is what you are to a doctor. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just one way of doing things. And so I think that when you understand that right off the start and you realize that doctors are not gods, even though they mm-hmm. are, they have a whole ton of power in the world. Mm-hmm. They are not gods, and they have done a lot of destruction to people. And it's important to understand that. And, you know, obviously we're not shitting on doctors. We're just telling you that you are your own best advocate. You are your partner's best advocate. If your partner is incapable of advocating for himself, like a lot of them are in the ICU, question things. And when you get those gut feelings of this is not right, follow them, because there are signs pointing you into a direction that you need to go. And there's nothing wrong with asking questions.
100%. Exactly. And being able to have those discussion with your partner too. Like, I learned that early in Cuba and in ICU, you know, gathering the information, going back to your partner, discussing it with them, letting them still be in charge of their body and their care and their medical care, and not allowing the way that our Western society has treated, has replaced religion with medicine, and not allowing that to be your religion, but being able to get informed decision making based on the data that you collect and the research you collect yourself, and read and learn. And don't, like you said, like, these medical professionals are needed. They do so much good in the world. They help so many people, but also being able to be realistic around human error. I've seen it my entire life with my mom, with my partner, with myself, with our community members, with everybody. Human error. And that's a real thing. And I right before this podcast, you know, we're talking about, even like with my mom before she passed away that last year, it was like doing 18 treatments of ECT in September, and going for carpal tunnel surgery, being able to see if that was a good idea. They were ready to do some kind of eyelid surgery. They were still willing to rip her apart and perform these procedures, even though she only had months to live. And I mean, those are some of the realities. Hate to break it to you, but the system isn't perfect. But when you do need these professionals, just know that to be kind, be kind. That is the number one thing. Is it's easy to get frustrated when you're in these heated debates, especially, and you just want the truth and you just want the answers. But realizing that we're all human, and humans make errors.
Well, and I always like to encourage people to do their own research. And anybody who thinks that Western medicine is the only option, especially after the initial trauma, of course, these doctors are needed to sew you back up, to stitch you back together, mm-hmm. to take the test, to do the test, to do the blood work. You need that. But you also need complementary medicine that looks a little bit deeper in a different way. And I would encourage everybody, when they blindly trust everything that their physician says to them, to look into Google and type in the top 5 causes of death in North America. And you will find that medical mistake, medical error, is amongst the top 5 every year. So that says a lot. And if you understand that, and if you understand that, yes, of course you need them, but they're not the be all and end all. And unfortunately, we don't live in a society where collaboration is appreciated. I'll give you an example. When my mom did her Chinese medicine training, when she got her doctorate in Chinese medicine, she went to China to train. A province called Jiangyin. And when she went there, she noticed something very different about their systems. You know, I know, you know, everybody has their opinion of China. Let's take politics out of this for a second. What China does really well is they have hospitals that are Western hospitals, but 50% of the staff are traditional Chinese medicine practitioners and holistic practitioners. And so when you go to the hospital, you have half of your team is a Western medicine practitioner and the other half of your team is Eastern medicine. And they work together. They work together with the systems of the body, say, okay, you do this, I'll do this. And it's extremely eye-opening. She said it changed her life when she observed how they did things there. And unfortunately, we don't do that here because our systems are based on money and our systems are based on egos and our systems are based on, like you said, glorifying one way of doing things, like the new religion, right? And it's gotten us into a lot of trouble. And I think the coming years, it's going to get us into a lot more trouble as a society. But unfortunately, things have to come to a head before they're exposed, right? So I think that's a really, really good I'm glad we spent a few minutes on this point because I think everybody needs to understand very early on that there are a lot of different ways of doing things that are not told to you. And, you know, you'll be kind of on the fringe about this when you question things, but you have to question everything and you have to do your own research.
Well, I just wanted to quickly rip through these last couple, or sorry, these next two comments, because it's around the same thing we've been talking about, which is just educate yourself about SEI, but keep in mind that every injury is different. You need to develop a knowledge of what is normal for his body and what not to do and what is not. Sorry. Do not be intimidated by the guys in white coats. You will learn more and know more about SEI than most doctors ever will. And that is true. And the next comment sort of echoes that as well by saying, do not tolerate rude or condescending doctors. I don't care how great he is supposed to be. Go down the street or to the next town to find a respectful and understanding doctor. So that's the whole ego point. I don't want to get too deep into that, but there you have it. These are just some comments from the group. So we have quite a few more.
Wait. This one has to be mentioned. Because this is so important. We've seen so many of these mistakes, especially with our legal advocate. Don't assume hospitals know how to take care of SCI patients. Okay, this is huge, you guys, because this, like, I'm glad that I saw this one. The patients need a special bed to prevent bed sores. They need to be turned every 2 hours, 24/7. Bed sores are terrible, and unfortunately, they happen in hospitals. Their feet need to be propped up with booties or pillows to prevent bed sores on the ankles. Then you have to prevent blood clots. There is a machine to squeeze the legs to prevent blood clots. Make sure it's on his chart to be turned and on the dry erase board in the room for an extra reminder. When you visit, check his bum, hips, and ankles to look for bed sores starting. Familiarize yourself with each stage of bed sores and pressure sores and what they look like. They can get very deep very quickly. Okay, that is huge.
Yes, that is huge. It's 100%. Huge because
how many times, Elena, have we seen on the private group, women say, oh, he just got a bed sore from the hospital. He just got a pressure sore. They happen mostly in hospital care.
100%. This happened to Dan, both in Cuba ICU, and he got a pressure sore on the coccyx, which is your tailbone, in GF Strong, which is in a Canadian rehab. So he had two at the bottom of his feet from the ICU. They put a board at the bottom, against the footboard. They forced his feet to be, instead of being pointed toes, they forced his feet to be flat, to massive, massive blood blisters / developing into a pressure sore, and one on the coccyx, which was an open sore, an open pressure sore that, guess who got to learn to do the medical care for that? The spouse, the unpaid caregiver, the spouse. Yeah. So those are very real scenarios. I feel like I don't know anybody who has not at one point developed something like this.
Yeah. These are the cold, hard truths you need to hear early on because these things are very, very important and no one cares more than you. No one cares.
But also don't get freaked out because pressure sores can be healed. This is not a life and death thing. So please keep that in mind that with proper nutrition, do not go on NG tubes and tube feeds. And Nestle has a contract with pretty well all the hospital systems here. So keep in mind it's pure sugar. You're probably going to go into a diabetic coma before you do real healing with nutrition, some kind of a nutrition system for the skin and pressure breakdown, pressure sores from developing. So just be careful with that. You, again, be your own advocate, do your own research, know what goes into your body.
Yep. So I think this is a good comment to end off on, because there's a lot of information here. And this is another thing we get posted a lot on the private group. So it says here, being a caregiver is a choice. It doesn't matter if a hospital or social worker or anyone else tells you that you have to do this or that. It's always still your choice. You can refuse a discharge if you feel it would not be safe for him or you. You can require more support in the home as a condition of discharge. You can tell your PCP if you are overwhelmed and need help. They have help to help you find it. Elder Services also provides support to people with disabilities. You can get a nurse, a case manager, and many other supports if you need them. Also, I wish I knew about the PACE program from the beginning. It has been the difference between him being in nursing home and not. Everything about his health has improved greatly, and quality of life for both of us is better because we were able to get into the local PACE program. So that's very specific to where she lives. Every state is different. There's federal programs. You know, Canada is very different too. But that being said, do a deep dive and research with a social worker or yourself, because social workers don't know everything. It's the same kind of thing as a doctor. They don't know everything. But do some research as to caregiver supports. Come on the private group and ask about your specific state, what you can do as far as supports medically and for his care and for your care, and what is available in your state. Because there's a lot of women that have posted on the private group that they wish they knew about this program earlier. And what happens is it becomes too late, and then you have to follow these paperwork. So right off the bat, get someone in your family if they're wanting something to do. If you're too overwhelmed to look, it's a perfect thing for them to do, to look into the available options. But again, don't trust another person. Do the research right after they give you the options. Look into it right off the bat, because there's a lot of regret in the group of women who is like, oh, I wish I knew about this earlier. So that's definitely one really, really important thing that everyone should take away from this, is like, look into supports, look into what's available through your government, through your insurance. All of that is important. And it's also a good opportunity to, you know, I know we talked about her in the start of the episode because she's a sponsor of the podcast, but Robin Wishart, our legal advocate, has a lot of resources for this type of thing. If you are in Canada or you're in the States and you don't know what's available to you and you wanted to be pointed in the right direction, or you're having trouble getting through to people, Robin is great. She will point you in the right direction. And she has a lot of resources that for this specific thing of caregiver supports that are available. So that's all wonderful.
Well, and it's the reality. I mean, yeah. I remember, I hate to use this quote again, but my partner got dumped on my lap right out of rehab. It was a nightmare going to school, working. We lost our home, our jobs. Anyways, the whole bit, right? So that does happen. And social workers, for whatever reason, didn't provide us this information, which is kind of a little bit of a shame on you, because you're in such panic and stress and you can't look into all these things. You're trying to sell your home. You're trying to, you know, relocate to another city where the rehab centers are. There's a lot going on between family dynamics. There's a lot going on between you literally not having any space for you. And I'm sorry, this is not like a pregnancy that you can plan for. An accident happened and you've been thrown into this. So it's fair to say that this is extremely stressful situation that is extremely traumatic. And you really should get the help.
Yes, Elena, this is really interesting. I just realized this now. So I'm dealing, I'm an executor, for anyone who doesn't know, I'm an executor for a close loved one that has recently passed for their will. And, you know, you're explaining all of this and I'm remembering like what we were talking about earlier, remembering all of those situations where like we didn't know what to do. We weren't being guided. And you and I both had situations where years later we discovered we could have been on a program or we could have received this and we weren't told. I'm dealing with this incredibly long amount of paperwork after my loved one passed away. And the check boxes that are available, the lists that are available, the organization that is available after someone dies to help you is insane. It's nuts. You have so much to help you. You have so many companies. You have the government providing all of these resources as to exactly what to do, exactly the steps of what to take when someone passes. However, when a spinal cord injury happens, you have a whole rehab center where you don't have these checklists. You aren't given these resources. You have to rely on one person who doesn't give you the whole answer. You're left to your own devices. And so I just find that really, really interesting that like just how much more effort is put into the death of somebody when they're not here anymore versus someone who's alive and still here. That's just kind of just came to me right now. And I'm kind of like,
my mind is
a bit blown.
It's kind of hard not to get a little bit jaded because like, to be quite honest, I feel like everybody is just completely left. You're completely left to figure it out on your own. And it's really unfair. It's like, what do these people get paid for? People making salaries. What are they? Oh, you're not suicidal. Okay, cool. You don't need psychotherapy.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't seem like that is the margin for analyzing whether or not you should be able to have some help. Anyways, oh my God, my brain.
It's important to say these truthful statements of what we've experienced because it's our experience and it's a lot of people have the same experiences. And I don't like the whole thing of like pretending like everything's okay. It's not. The system is not okay in every which way.
No, you know,
there's people making a lot of money on the backs of someone's death versus someone staying alive, right? It's just the way that it is, especially in Canada. But it's important to talk about these things. These things are the truth. I know it's, you know, may be like nails on a chalkboard to some people, but it's important to talk about our experiences because this is how we create change. And so this episode was really important.
We still have so many comments. There were 80 comments on this post. So I guess we'll have to touch base on this at another time. But I mean, I'm really happy to see that women had so much to contribute to this topic because, hey, girl, we got your back and this is a hard time. If you are listening to this and your partner just had a spinal cord injury, you are not alone. We have so many resources for you. So please head on over to, at the very core, thank you for listening to this podcast episode, but please join our Facebook private group. This group, Wives of SEI, private discussion group, is just for wives and girlfriends of spinal cord injury. We are here to provide you with the resources so you don't get completely screwed at the very beginning of your partner's accident.
Yes. And we are there for you as well, 24/7, wagsofsci@gmail.com. If you'd like to talk to us privately, if you'd like to be connected with Robin, if you need some support. And you can also read the rest of the 80 comments on this post if you join the group. So please, it's saved as a feature post. You can find it easily. Just answer the membership questions and we will allow you in. And we're looking forward to meeting you and talking with you and learning your perspectives and your opinions on the group, because that's what this group is about. So thank you for listening. Thank you everyone who has joined us today. Thank you for giving us this time of your day. We are very fortunate to have this platform to voice our insights to create change. And we also rely on you 99% of the time to help us to create change. So please email us your stories, contact us anytime. If you want to follow us on Instagram, it's @wagsofsci. You can also find our videos on YouTube and, of course, our website, wagsofsci.com. We have some important things coming up in the next couple of weeks and some big announcements coming up. So please subscribe and stay tuned for our next few episodes.
And like always, take care of yourselves and love one another. Until next time, cheers. Cheers.